Yeah.
Very quickly, let me explain the circumstances. I was approached to be chair of this board, partly because the mayors were chairing it. There was a constant change, because mayors are here today and sometimes they're gone tomorrow. And there was a year left, and between the CEO and the management board gentleman and myself, we agreed that it was argued it's an IGR forum, really. It's not really, strictly speaking, a local government forum, that it contributes the cities to and the secondary cities that attach to the cities network 60% of the economic output. And in fact, the first chair was from the national sphere. But I think we've agreed that it'll be more appropriate for a mayor to chair. And so I would like to exit as chair of the board after Selga has its first conference to elect its new leadership. And so hopefully by September also I can move on. So I'm just there temporarily. Secondly, what we've done is we've brought in the human settlements and transport deputy ministers to also serve on the board, and they were very helpful and productive. The chairperson also was there when the report was released. Thirdly, we are looking for better relationships with the Selga, because I think it's quite important that the cities network and Selga work closer together, and we have different, distinct and complementary roles in my view. Fourthly, I think that people are aware, well, let's move on, I'll save time. And I just want to say that we have, of course, released the cities network report. The chairperson was present at the release. It's been well received, although because it came on the eve of an election, no doubt parties used the report in a very tendentious way to advance their cause for getting more votes. Hopefully now with the elections behind us, and with the president having said on Saturday at a local government level, we should work across parties and seek to reduce inter-party tension, because we have common goals on improving service delivery and development, that a more considered reflection of the report would occur. And perhaps at some stage we have brought earlier versions of the report. This committee might want to consider calling us back to take us through the report. Essentially, the report says that cities, if you look at the magnitude of the challenges they've had over the last 10 years, have shown themselves to be remarkably resilient. But clearly, if they're going to meet their various challenges, environmental, employment, in-migration, other challenges, they'll have to be even more resilient. So I think the notion is that I think national and provincial government need to also more actively work with the cities. We are, as you know, and the CEO will speak more about this, expanding. I think this committee has raised this before. We're thinking of going beyond the 9 cities that are currently part of the network, towards maybe 21 and even possibly 27 municipalities, and we'll use a differentiated model once we go for that. It means the metro is treated in a slightly distinct way from the larger secondary cities, from the smaller, relatively smaller urban municipalities. Obviously, too, I think you're aware we've gone beyond South Africa, particularly around the area of finances. So we're working in the SADC countries, though the CEO tells me that the pressure for us is to work in the continent. We're being very wise, I think, to go incrementally. Then there's a 10-point research agenda that Dolan Banga will deal with. And we're aware, of course, that some people feel, especially within the majority party, but perhaps outside too, that really we should be focusing on the rural areas. That is, the rural municipalities are the most challenging, and the emphasis on the cities is perhaps disproportionately high. Our reply is that if the cities get their act better together, or together better, whatever it is, and they function better, and they contribute more to the economy, the rural areas could easily be the primary beneficiary, depending on how the municipalities in the network and other urban municipalities relate with rural areas, so that the two shouldn't be seen as completely separate. Yes, they're distinct, but they're interrelated. And this is the approach certainly of the cities network. Moreover, we're aware that debates, when I chaired this committee, it came up then even about the need for a district network and a local learning network as well. And these are things that perhaps should also be on our joint exchanges when we appear before the committee and see how we can take further. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Just one quick comment to you, Stolle. Thank you for producing a people-friendly version of the report. We really appreciate your respecting our time. So we have a people's version, and then we can go in deep on the main one whenever we have enough time. But thank you very much. Please proceed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I think that is the result of a shambling Chairperson himself, who, on the eve of the release of that relatively thick version of the report, said, look, this is not friendly, going to somewhere. So while some of us were on Easter holidays, some of us had to go and work on a much shorter version of the report. Needless to say, I must say that take the opportunity. Thanks again for inviting us here. We value the interaction, I think, very much so, because then it results in the work that we do. We will, I think, as per Chairperson, before he departs, I think towards the end of September, latest in October, we will have worked on another version of the same report, which will be looking mostly, it will be produced with a lot of statistics and data and all of that. I mean, we were very careful not to disalign ourselves with the process of statistical analysis that is taking place, as driven by Steps SA on the one hand, but also in recognition of the fact that we ourselves as municipalities, especially the large ones, do not have our act together when it comes to statistical information. So thanks very much to the Chairperson. We will still thank him at some point. Members, the report was released just about 2 weeks before the election, and the version that you have in front of you, the shorter version, as indicated, there is a longer version on the website, and I think we have distributed copies to this committee. In the next period, we'll continue to disseminate in all provinces as much as we possibly can. And I think particularly to those municipalities that are member cities of the South African Cities Network, which are now the 8 metropolitan municipalities and Umfunduzi, as of, I think, the 19th of this month. Chair, the presentation is going to be very short and, I think, straight to the point. I mean, that's how it is structured. We thought that it might be important for us to come here and sort of start off by reminding ourselves of the organizational mandate of the Cities Network and how we have performed. But I think importantly, to begin to say what are the implications of what we are seeing emerging for the business plan of the Cities Network. In the last 30 minutes or so, we've added 2 slides, and I think just on the basis of the presentation we saw earlier, in which we elucidate what the current budget of the Cities Network is with some relative detail. At the last meeting, and I think as requested, at the last meeting we were asked to start reflecting on the issues that were outstanding when we last came here. And there they are. Just as a reminder, there was great emphasis around the issue of water. And I think as I make the presentation, you will see how we are beginning to cover it in the business plan. There is a big question around statistics. Yes, Stats SA is the custodian of statistical information, but I think the fact of the matter, which I think the committee has to be aware of, is that municipalities and cities are not necessarily happy with the level of detail that we have. In fact, I think the point is we do not have the correct level of detail. I think the stats that we have are at a more regional level, if not at a municipal level. When it comes to what we do not have, the question is, how do we get about that hurdle? So that if you're going to have good governance decision-making, you need statistics. I mean, I think mayors and councillors need statistics of movements of people, the economies and the like that are happening as far as, if possible, at what level. I am told that this is a difficult task, but I think the point is we're exploring it, and then you'll see it on the research agenda. The third issue that was raised, and I think it continues to be raised even in our board, being constituted, of course, by councillors, senior councillors, members of mayoral committee from the 9-member municipalities, and whomever is an unelected official. In certain instances, it's a city manager. In certain instances, it's a member of the management committee, depending on each city. There's no dictate about that. But the point is, the board has continuously been saying, look, you're too urban. And I think so it's something that continues to strike us. You're too urban. You're focusing too much on urban. And we're trying to strike that balance. I think we have now taken the decision that understanding better rural and urban interface is going to be part and parcel of our agenda, and we will continue to unpack. And I think we need to be called from time to time to account on how it is that we are dealing with that. And I think the other issue that was raised was how are we defining urban, and I think in particular, what are the human resource capacity of local government? Because the last time we were here, we were saying there's a serious question around the human capacity of local government generally, but I think specifically of the cities. On the other side, there were organizational issues that were raised, and I think the chairperson has spoken to that. will we continue to be the nine? Or I think the answer is no. We are expanding the reach of our work, and I think as the chairperson has said, up to as far as SADC for now. There are capacity constraints. We are ahead with those constraints. We don't want to be a large organization. I think we think the smaller we are, the better, the more effective we are. We just need to be complemented and supplemented elsewhere. What intervals will we produce the State of Cities report? From the 2006 report, we have thought we will produce it every time, or it will align with the cycle of elections for local government. Whether that will change as a consequence of the potential for local government elections to be held in 2014 or not, we do not know. But I think we will cross the bridge when we get there. The Cities Network, I think as it were, we established in 2001, we were registered in 2001. Initially, we are a program of government. I think it's important to register that. So we are not a Section 21 company. We are a program through which government seeks to understand what is happening in urban spaces. And I think for organizational purposes, we put those objectives and we continue being dear to them, where we collate information and we share information. As the chairperson has said, most recently the board of the Cities Network, in addition to the nine and COCTA and SALGA, we've been joined by the Department of Human Settlements and the Department of Transport, represented by the two deputy ministers of those respective departments. Otherwise, the membership base from a point of view of municipalities remains the same. As I said, it's the eight metropolitan municipalities, including Umfundozi. We still think that our programmatic approach of having the five themes of productive city, inclusive city, sustainable city, the well-governed city, and the city development strategy remains concrete. It stems very much directly from the white paper on local government. I think we've just used different words just to color what it is that we do and be relatively less government-centric. And I think someone says we're trying to be stylish. I mean, whatever that means. At the end of the day, we think this is possibly the best framework for evaluating whether any other municipality is performing or not. Is it productive? Is it inclusive? Is it working in a way that seeks to promote governability and governance and accountability? Is it a sustainable municipality? And does it have a long-term strategy? Some of the views that I imagine from the city managers is that, in fact, even the 20-year plans that we're having are just not enough. I mean, there's thought that's coming, for instance, from the Etegwini conurbation, that perhaps we need to start thinking 50 years and 70 years and start to project like that. Is that possible? It is possible. I think the Indians have done it. I think we've learned lessons from that. The Chinese have started to do it. And we don't know where else we will be able to learn in the near future about how to project futuristically. Some of the tools that have been used are population increases or migration patterns. And I think not just the continent, but I think Southern Africa in particular is facing a great phenomena around migration. And just by looking at migration patterns over the last X period of time, we should be able to project. What happened 50 years is likely to take place twice as much in the next 50 years. And that should be able to impact on how it is that we're giving effect to the policy and the legislation and the planning and the functional tools that we're supposed to be arming municipalities with. Generally, that has been our business approach in the last, five of the 8 years that we started, where we said what we will do as the Cities Network, precisely because of the nature of the animal we are, we will provide guidance, we will discover new things, and to a very limited extent, we will do assistance. And in simple terms, what it means is that at any given point in time, if Buffalo City is to transform from a local municipality to a metropolitan municipality, we will be there to guide them. We're not necessarily doing the work ourselves, but we will get them the best peers. So we would, in this particular instance, take in this particular instance, just to give a very practical example, we've taken three people that were former city managers, three in Mangaung, and three we've deployed them in Buffalo City, and we've said, help drive this particular process. And what we do at the background of the Cities Network is to write down those lessons and actually write the story, what happened, where were we, where were they, what were the lessons learned, so that if one day Ladysmith wants to do the same, there's some documentation that they're able to refer to. It doesn't mean that they're going to have to implement it as is, and that's what the notion of guidance is. Discovery has been about picking up innovations. How are people and practitioners on the ground doing things differently? Whether they are appointed officials or elected officials, there's a different ways in which different municipalities are doing things. And by the way, I think the good thing about the Cities Network is just its ability to transcend political boundaries. There's no political organization that is not in the Cities Network. There's lessons that get to be learned from just across the member cities, depending on what practitioner it is. So by way of example, I mean, you will have your economics, your HIV, and virtually everything else under the sun that the board instructs us to do, and we will use that particular guidance. But anyway, that's now all in the past. The question is, how are we moving forward? And I'll speak to that. Just generally, just to touch base on how we have managed to grow from 2003 up to 2010, I think you can see what it is that we've been producing, the number of publications, the number of exchange and learning events that the Cities Network has been doing, working, of course, in conjunction with all partners. One of those partners are the DBSA, the HSRC in certain instances, the CSIR, the member municipalities themselves. In fact, they have now, I think the trend that we're beginning to pick up is that there are municipalities that are putting in place their own knowledge management functions, which is quite a great thing to do. Again, I will send you back to the white paper on local government. If you read it thoroughly, one of the things that we said we will be able to do in transforming local government is to understand what is happening by putting in place knowledge management. Needless to say, I still personally think that there's a question that we need to pose to the entirety of the local government sector, and perhaps using the spectacles of SAUG, and say, what type of learning is taking place in the other local government structures? I'm talking local municipalities, district municipalities, coastal municipalities, inland municipalities, in their varied form, because there's a lot that they need to be talking to each other about, and that requires both structural and systemic support, and the Cities Network was just an offshoot of those. What has been our revenue base? Very minimal, considering, I think, all other organizations, if I'm not mistaken, as per the budget that we have this year. It's the first time that we've actually had a budget of 26 million rand in the X number of years that we've had. And I think we're talking financial austerity. Yeah, I think this is the one entity that is able. I apologize, this slide is the one that I just added now. But I think you can look at those figures. To date, we've secured about 26 million rand, about 25 million, so we are 1.2 million rands below what our target for this particular year. And we consider this year to be a very transitional year from how we did things in the last 8 years to how we're wanting to do things, which is what I'm going to be talking to. Our sources of funds are very clear. COCTA is very prominent in what we do, and we want COCTA to continue to be prominent in what we do. And there are reasons for that. Not least is the fact that once the Cities Network gets to be funded by organizations other than those organizations that are South African organizations, it's going to have a problem of overseas dependency. We will end up driving an agenda that doesn't inform what it is that we do. So it's nice, for instance, to have the World Bank financing us, but we don't want that to be a dominant a feature into the years, which speaks then to our strategy of why we are bringing the Department of Transport and the Department of Human Settlements and National Treasury to say, look, if you put just an extra 1 million rands into what we're doing, then we have so much more. We don't really need tons and tons of money. We can be able to do this work internally as a South African piece of work. And that's effectively what we have managed to secure at that point, at this point. point in time. Can I just go back to the previous slide to this one? That has been the general picture up to 2010. Again, over the 8 year period, COFTA has been funding us at a rate of about 25% of our total budget. The subscriptions from the member cities, and all of them continue to pay, not very huge subscription fees, 200,000, 500,000, depending on how kindly a particular mayor feels that from time to time. There are sometimes, and we have to struggle, this is not easy. I mean, even if you ask for 75,000, Mangaung will tell you, hey, we don't have money, or Msunduzi, but we continue to say, well, that doesn't matter. I mean, you should still be able to pay for your subscriptions. And to date, all of them, except Nelson Mandela Metro, have paid. And I am sure that particular municipality will have paid its subscription. So over the period, 49% of our budget has come from outside, which is a quite a healthy balance. But I think what we want to do is to skew it and sort of change it. And that has been the picture over the years. Surveys of the work we do from time to time. We send out surveys to various practitioners. They give us a sense of whether we are doing well, and I think it says that we're actually doing a very good job. But I mean, it's very difficult to be self-beating at this stage. I'm sure members of the committee may reflect, and or colleagues that interact with the work of the Cities Network generally. But I think from a quantitative point of view, there's just been an increase of the work that we do, and I think we continue to be different in that particular way. Who comes to our sessions? As you can see, 40% is people that are not coming from municipalities. In fact, in most instances, it's people that are not even coming from the public sector itself. A lot of private sector entities are finding a lot of value or a platform to interact with municipalities. And I think we think that's great, except that the chairperson says to us, no, but that's wrong. I mean, why are you unable to attract public sector people to your activities? We don't know. It continues to be a vexing question. At some point, we thought perhaps it's the way in which we structure our activities or the way in which we partner with non-government institutions or perhaps plainly the way in which we fail. And we do fail from time to time. I think by admission, there have been sessions in which we have just been unable to attract city attention. I mean, notable amongst them has been the lack of participation of municipal practitioners when it came to the question of answering, is the World Cup 2010 a relevant project for city development? I mean, it's been very much, it's a question that ourselves, we have just not been in a position to answer, at least not intelligently, definitely. I think it's something that beats us. So what are the changes that members of the committee should anticipate beyond this? And I must say, this is Deputy Minister's work and influence, and I must say, infighting amongst ourselves about how it is that we should be driving the program. So it's not emotive stuff. It's about the substance of the work that we should do. I think the first thing that we're saying is, in the next 5 years, we cannot continue to work if we do not understand the shape and the form of our cities. There's a whole notion of typology. It's going to be very important if we have to change how it is that these municipalities are working. Again, the theme, how are we giving effect to the differentiated approach to supporting local government? I think this is how we are saying we're going to be doing it. Secondly, how broad can we go? You know, because the more you add, effectively, if you have to increase the board membership of the Cities Network from 9, 27 municipalities, you're bound to fail. So I think there's an agreement around that the traditional members will continue to hold spot when it comes to the governance issues of the Cities Network. But the footprint of our work, I think at the moment we're agreeing anything between the 21 largest and the 27 largest municipalities is going to be what we're going to have to do. Will that include SADC? There's a yes and no. At the moment, we've been very limited about the extent to which we are working with SADC municipalities. There is work that we've done, there's a lot of intelligence that we've done in understanding how the finances of various SADC-based municipalities is functioning. There's lessons that you get from Windhoek, there's lessons that you get from Lusaka, and the likes. There's some sense of what's happening there. But clearly, they are nowhere near most of South African municipalities. Peddling, changing the policy response and practitioner behavior across the spheres, and that whole notion of deepening knowledge, and I think it comes back to the pie chart that we showed earlier, where we're saying we have to increase the participation of public sector employees. And so that's going to form the basis upon which we would want to be evaluated, or our business plan to be evaluated in the next 5 years. And if we don't do those things, then we might as well close down shop. Chair, just a little bit of detail in the next 5 slides. I mean, what are we talking about when we talk about our work having to focus on these typologies? When we started to do work on the urban development framework, we sort of began to give definition. I'm answering some of the questions that were asked earlier. How are we giving definition to urban? Well, I think it's narrow to want to give a specific definition. I mean, most of urban South Africa has both urban and rural elements. So there's the whole notion of saying, let's look at functionality, let's look at location as a way of giving a definition. But this is how we have dissected our understanding of South African local government, the structure and the location issues. That you've got city regions, Gauteng, for instance, is a city region. The Ethekwini area is a city region. Of course, including your Umsunduzi, part of the south coast, to a certain extent, some elements of the north. We think you can see cities in your Nile states, your Mangaung and the like, and I think there are clear examples, and that some areas in our country are in fact regional centers. We could spend time giving this, and there are service towns, and then there are towns which are mostly rural. We just picked up this slide yesterday night, and even decided to put it in this morning. The UN Habitat has just published a state of world cities, and one of the things that they've done is to map the world. And I think I apologize that the picture on your pieces of paper might not be clear, but I think it's relatively clearer there, where they are looking at what they call city regions and where they are emerging. And on the green line, if you look from Cape Town up to Gauteng, and parts of KwaZulu-Natal going into Tanzania, and then I think there's Kenya there, and I stand corrected, that seems to be the emerging urban corridor, or mega regions in Africa. And of course, you've got a sense of what's happening also in the world. And I think what it says is that perhaps we also need to start taking a regional perspective into how we look at governance. And yes, it's okay to be South African-centric and talk about municipalities, but also we need to start developing a very regional, if not SADC, at least a sub-Saharan look at what is happening, what have been the trends. And those corridors are corridors of movements of people from Cape Town to as far as Tanzania. And that's the trend. And you can see that over time, if we're talking urbanization, those corridors, the size of those corridors are likely to expand, or the location in which the movement is likely to be is going to be expanded. And clearly, there are three city regions in South Africa that have clearly pounced their way: Gauteng, Cape Town, and Ethekwini. So what does it say? Again, what's happening globally, cities are taking center stage, and that's happening also in our country. They continue to contribute to the GDP. I think in terms of the last State of Cities report, we've referred to something like 60% of the GDP is produced by these 9 geographic areas. That's a new slide, I apologize. That's the only other new slide, henceforth. They continue to contribute to the GDP, and that urbanization is a phenomena that we are also facing currently, and we will continue to face. It takes different shapes and sizes and forms, but the fact of the matter is that if you study it over time, it's something that is there. And so how is it playing itself out there in South Africa? Let's start with the least complicated area, Mangaung. That's how Mangaung is looking like at the moment. Chairperson, I think this is your Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. But this is what it looks like. I think perhaps the most important map is this one, and the space that you see. And I think we all are aware of that space. But I think if you look at densities, that's what it looks like. And I think the point is, 20 years from now, those will have changed. So the question is, how do we influence what's happening in Maung so that it meets the imperatives of development that we want? It's not impossible, but how do we influence that? And Maung,
sorry,
sure.
Just to interrupt you, what's missing on this map here to talk to your subject is, this is the NA.
Correct. Correct.
So in a sense, it was shown Maung, because in speaking about subject and the related stuff, so you haven't completed my assessment.
I will take that into account.
No, but the significant view that you are expressing there, but not in the math. You say it verbally, yes. I mean, you say in the documentation, but not in the math.
Okay. I'm sure with time we should be able to do that. So, we just have to be given the political direction and impetus to do it. Then we will do it. But there has to be a reason why we want to do it. And this is the political perspective that we need to develop of what is our approach to study. And I think that's the point that we are attempting to make. So anyway, that is Maung Aung for you as it looks at this point in time. That is Umfunduzi. Chatterson, I think that's your area. That's what it looks like. And again, I think the point is it's going to change. And I think we can see the ruralness in Umfunduzi. Vis-a-vis your traditional city and city center and urban and all of those things. So it tells you that we have to put on a different set of spectacles when we look at Umfunduzi and the solutions of Umfunduzi. Next is the Nelson Mandela Bay. I mean, relatively less rural compared to Umfunduzi, but rural enough, with clear population densities here and there. Again, I think the issue about these maps, as we have done them, is the extent to which they are supposed to arm this committee to understand what is happening in Tambo vis-a-vis what is happening in Motherwell, vis-a-vis what is happening in Kabeja and PE University and all of those things. Because I think that's the point that we're making, that the absence of proper statistics makes it very difficult for whoever is governing that area, irrespective of their political persuasion. Difficult for them to govern properly if they do not have proper statistics to take decisions around that area. Buffalo City is possibly the most sparse area across these nine cities. It is going to make it extremely difficult. The current metro transformation process towards metro has to address that. And perhaps what the committee would want to do is to interact with the council there to ask those questions. How are you closing that gap? Because that is too much. I mean, from, let's say, the East London CBD on the one hand up to Timbaza, just assuming at the delivery of pipe, I can't remember where the main source of water is there, but if we were to locate the main source of water, it will just tell you how expensive it is to maintain that apartheid spatial formation. And the question is, how do we close it? Next is the city of Cape Town. Clearly, I mean, there's a lot. Again, if you all you have to do on all of these maps is to drill down and have a better understanding of this, what's happening in Fishhook, vis-a-vis what's happening in Gordon's Bay, Mitchell's Plain, and all of those things. Because we now have to get to the point where there are space-specific solutions. And I think that's what the Ministry is talking about when it talks to a differentiated approach to providing support to local government. There has to be a space difference and not an assumption of a one-size-fits-all. Etsegwini, again, extremely rural in many ways. Going, I think, as far out as areas such as Ndwedwe. Discussions, I mean, and very heavy discussions about where is the urban edge and all of those. And I think it's all a question of who are the main decision makers. The last two slides speak to the Gauteng city region, again, with its own dynamics. So what's the point around this map? The point around this map is that if we are a knowledge-generating entity of government that seeks to understand this, in the next phase, if we do not give a much clearer picture of trends as they happen in each of those areas, then there's no need to continue having the citizen network. And perhaps that's the question is, how do we open that leaf and how do we continue? This is a map from the south. There's a map from the from the north of the south exhibition. I'm sure at some point we will be able to merge these and come up with one single map. But anyway, I think the point is emphasis. I think that's the point that we are trying to reply. So what is going to then inform our work in the next 5 years and perhaps in the next 10 years? And we've cut it down into these three work streams of research. The work stream that seeks to make us act with a better understanding of trends and phenomena. The work stream that seeks to ensure that we change the built environment. And I think there are sub-sectoral issues there. And the work stream that makes us deal with vulnerability. And let me just speak to the first work stream. There's a sense that we need an urban policy, the type of urban policy that will supplement the work that the National Planning Committee, the National Planning Commission is doing, on the one hand, but also the type of policy that seeks to complement the rural policy. Because you can't have one side of the coin and not the other. And I think that's what perhaps is missing in the policy space. And that has been put in a very broad sense. I mean, we can... there could be a detailed discussion of what we mean by urban development, but it's the type of urban development policy. But it would be the type of policy that allows for a contract to exist between national, provincial, local stakeholders, social partners around these specific spaces, because there can't just be one solution. The second issue is around the local government indicators, and we broadly put them as the local government indicators. But I think, to be citizen network selfish, we're really talking about urban indicators at the end. We need to provide the political decision part of the machinery with indicators. At the moment, they are not there. It's very difficult for councils to tell you what's happening in the ward, what's happening in the region, what's happening in the municipality, what's happening in the city region, and then be able to interpret that. The second work stream, changing the built environment. I think we've spoken about land, land use, land acquisition, land disposal, and all of those, and that basket of things. Thirdly, opening up the public transport. I think the initiative for BRT, as we have seen it, is good, but I think it needs to be propelled beyond this. And the fifth, the need to create cohesion through proper human settlement. The last four, are really about local government sector itself. There's a sense amongst our practitioners that we need to think differently about how it is that local government is financed. A much more enhancing financing model for local government. The natural resource base, and this is one of the questions that was asked earlier, why are we not specific about water? I mean, in that natural resource base, it's not just water, it's water, it's energy, which are all things that are becoming expensive for the general household in a city to be able to afford. Point eight, I think we've made the point around understanding and better the relationship between urban and rural. What is that interdependence and what is that interface? Point number nine, it's about building a cadership for local government. It's not happened. It's either local government has lost its human capacity, human resource capacity rather, and it continues to steal from somewhere. There's a sense that maybe the local government sector should really move one step up in terms of being able to ensure that there are tools to train more and more people that will become dedicated soldiers of local government. And the last one is that of promoting socio-political stability. And these are things like that local government cannot, there's no amount of planning that it can do. They just happen. Xenophobic attacks. Food insecurity and the life and the likes. I mean, there's a sense that if we can focus then, or rather we will want to focus our agenda, our research agenda along those lines, of course using the programmatic framework. Just this slide, I think, basically begins to categorize how we will then respond to various geographic areas, as it were, in terms of how we will produce knowledge. I don't know if Jesse and the chairperson can make this one. But Chair, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much for that briefing. Members, there's the presentation. Any comments that you want to make? Questions? Honorable Ntangeka from the Republic of Mpumalanga.
Chair, it's just a comment and thank the user friendly presentation. My comment is in the opening of the presentation, you made mention of saying that we don't have a web based service delivery information statistics. I think here, all of us from here until here, we are most people who are having those statistics because we are from first from campaigns doing door to door. We know in each ward what is happening there. That's my comment. If you are fresh from there, you can get any information that you want. Water, road, discussion. Thank you.
Thanks. Mine is on understanding better the and improving the local government financing and the model. I would like to know maybe you had an idea of how this local government policy can be the finance. Because one time we had a meeting with Sajarin, and then we asked them why are they failing us? Because if you check that this small municipality, there are no revenue there at all, and then we expected that they must perform.
Okay, any other questions,
coming to the question, how is the process involved by 9:50? I think from I haven't read the mission and vision, and maybe the answer is there. But I just want to check what criteria that makes the board to have 9:50 members, and also what informed you to ask the two deputy ministers. And also, sir, what informed you to go ahead and wanting to have this signature?
Okay. You can't still be new to local government.
I'll always be new. I learn everything.
One of the, I want to tell you, when you speak about the research, rather the statistics that people say is difficult, we made a recommendation as required by the money amendment, the, what is it called, budget review. Report. You made a recommendation there that SAUDA, COXA, South Africa, and Treasury need to bring back the information that we have in the public complaint that they are outdated. That in the presentation to the standing committee on finance, we asked Badil Lohasa about what they are doing to improve the capacity of statistics collected at this level. And our argument remains that
that seems to be the best place where to collect information at a municipal level, another suggesting. One of the examples we often use, I'm sure the Brazilians are tired of us, that Curitiba, they actually have a research institute of sorts at the municipal level. To talk about my favorite, they'll tell you how many saxophone players are there, how many dramas are there, just to give you the detail which they go in the municipality and so on. But the lack of the up-to-datedness of the information leads to what municipalities call underfunding based on wrong information. So this is why they are so angry with that continued stuff. So we've made a recommendation that you guys must meet, I'm just saying you, Cities Network, as part of SALGA, to talk about that. You mustn't be told it's difficult. We would like to get some specific answers to that recommendation that we made. So this is the one thing, Deputy Minister, that we really would like you to look at those recommendations, look at their meetings that we recommend that be held to discuss and give us an idea of if there are difficulties, what difficulties are those? How do we overcome them and so on? So that would be one area that I think is very important. The urban-rural interface. I think we've spoken about this interconnectedness for a long time. Deputy Minister, for as long as I led SAMCO, no, even before it was created, in the mid-80s, this relationship between rural and urban was a debate, and that relationship. And I also happen to know that COCTA has a document that they are refusing to make public on urbanization and stuff like that. When is it going to come out? Can we ask that we be taken into confidence with this work? There are brief presentations that were done on this thing in some of the committee meetings in the past, which speak to the interface between the rural and the urban stuff. This is important work. One of the things that struck me when people talk about it, part of the reason is that in my days at the National Housing Forum, one of the things we rejected was the toilets in the field. Now, part of the strategy is how municipalities prepare for the inevitable inflow of people from rural areas and from outside of the country as part of the urbanization process. We've known this thing, that it's happening, and it keeps going on and so on. So municipalities are meant to strategically design plans to receive people as they come into these urban areas and so on. So part of the reason why that urbanization, urban-rural interface is crucial to inform the sort of work that needs to be done to handle this thing. So I just think that for me, that's one of the areas that's crucial for the development of the work that we are talking about. And that would be great if we can get to hear about that stuff. The importance of the district learning network, learning from the city's network. I mean, it's amazing how in our discussion with SALGA they told us, no, the district learning network, and the Honorable Wenga was a keen member of the of the network and so on. But we would like to, there is an interface there, an interconnection there that isn't being made explicit, because it will provide interesting stories around that work that needs to happen. So this is the city's network on the one hand, but there's work that ought to be happening or is happening elsewhere, whose interconnectedness is not being made explicit and is not spoken about enough of and so on. So we would like to get to see that coming up more and so on. Who do you attract to your activities and so on? What you haven't asked is how much of the work that you do you take to where the public sector meets. There is a forum that used to be convened by Tuli Khader, who's gone to the to head this innovation thing under public service administration. as a public sector learning opportunity and so on. Have you gone to some of those forums? They were meant to be taking place annually, so that you impact on the public sector and you increase the level of awareness of the dynamics that are happening inside the cities. That's contained in your overall presentation, but specifically in this the latest report, because I think much as we said earlier that the local government elections would have contributed a little to local government understanding, but not as much as we would like to have. It is only in very specific forums in which people really engage that they're there to grow and so on. So those are some of the few comments that I wanted to make about that way.
There's some interest this side of the table in your budgetary hole of 1.2 million rand. What are you doing to fill it, and if you don't succeed, what's the impact going to be?
Your capacity as black cash. Which limb do you want us to break to be able to get our money back? Okay. Yeah, that's a very important question. Simon, before you do that, let me just point this out. You were saying that you prefer to stay small, to be complemented elsewhere. But I would assume that SALGA would be that elsewhere. In other words, the work that you do at the Cities Network, there are other things that members often throw at you which really belongs to SALGA and so on. And so it suggests that perhaps the what you said earlier on is crucial. A sharper, closer working relationship between yourself and SALGA, so that we can see the outcome of that result in what happens and so on. I thought that is a very important point to highlight as one of the objectives or things we would like to see happening to us. Because in any case, you are, in a sense, by through your constitution, part of SALGA, so to speak. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Nick.
So thanks. Let me start exactly at that point and just pull out this slide. I think, again, I'm answering informed by what we did in the past. And I did indicate that we said we would do guidance, discover, and assistance. And we did not see ourselves doing the assistance, because for us, assistance would mean, let's make a typical example. We sit with National Treasury and the DBSA. We look at what's the best way in which we can develop townships. And we understand that. And then we realize that actually practitioners that are responsible for urban renewal and all of those things, there are certain skills that they do not have. And then we put a course together. We test it with a few practitioners, and then over a period it becomes something concrete. And the next step that we have to do is to hand it over to the appropriate organization, be it SALGA or the local government CETA, and I think that's the point that we're trying to make, that ours is to pick up the innovation. I think if we're in the private sector, we will say almost commercialize it. And make it replicable. Make it replicable and allow those that are specialists in putting together a training manual and those allow them to be the ones that do the work that they ought to be specialized in. And I think that's the point that we want to make about why it is that we must remain small. Because if we want to do everything in the value chain, we will fail. And I think that's the whole strategy. And I think that's the whole point of saying, even if within the value chain we wanted to do just guidance, we still would not be able to do it across the 283 municipalities. So let the compliments come from those. I mean, if you were to have a network of coastal towns, or in fact, one of the most important innovations that we've been elsewhere suggesting is a network of border towns, because they have very specific things and challenges that, that amongst themselves they need to be talking about. Those things that impact beyond the ordinary day-to-day work of a municipality.
We've asked the department to bring us that we have them exactly that one about
the towns that come there. So I think that's the type of complementarity that we were seeking for. So it doesn't necessarily have to be it doesn't necessarily have to be a network of municipalities that are district municipalities, because even district municipalities themselves, they differ. I mean, and I think it has to be very much challenge-based or issue-based. I mean, what are our issues? The coastal municipalities have totally different sets of things that they require, especially in the context of climate change. They must be made to talk to each other, to supplement what it is that everyone. So the city's network was, I think, propelled by, I normally refer to them as the first generation of city leaders, so municipal managers. The lives of people that were concerned about how it is that they were going to reflect on the first 10 years of a democratic local government. What would they say? And the notion of putting in place a knowledge management entity, as suggested by the white paper, amongst others. And then I think the discussion at the time was, okay, fine, let's put together a cities network, the city learning network, and the local learning network. We thought that it would easily work. But I think in as much as that would have worked, the reason it worked was because we had these city managers that said, okay, we will commit our municipalities to put the money. We're not going to wait for anyone. And I think that's how. So there was no... there was their criteria, yes. I think the criteria was, at the time, I think in 1998, thereabout, there was a discussion about which municipalities would become metropolitan municipalities. And there was a sense that these could work together. I think the third issue was that these are people that knew each other, whether from far, you know, they knew each other, and they would have worked with each other for some time. So there were bonds that had been created. There was an attraction of backlash. The issue around working with STEP SA and National Treasure and SALGA around the issue STEP, I don't know how many times we've all been talking about it. And I think we've reached a point where we're saying we want the information at what level, because this one, vis-a-vis that one, are totally different and the trends are different. So there has to be just a set of minimum indicators by word in which we agree upon. That must be collected. So it could be water, by way of example, if water is the issue. But let's just agree on a minimum set of indicators which we all can talk to. This doesn't necessarily have to make local government the custodian of statistics. But let them, each and every one of these local governments collect systematically and consistently over time, and let's see what's going to happen. Because when we're producing the State of Cities report, we struggle to get that information, which is why this State of Cities report doesn't have the statistical almanac like the previous one. So we have now had to add another 12 months in which we're going back to the ground and we're digging those practitioners. Some of them have left. So there are vacuums in who has been collecting statistics, either in the city of Cape Town or in the city of Etekwini, and that function is possibly very difficult to locate where it is now as compared to when we produced the last State of Cities report in 2006. And I think that's the point. The point is, let's agree on what would this committee like to see as an indicator for a productive municipality. If you give us five, then we will work on that. What would you like to see as the five indicators for good governance? And then let them be collected over a five-year period. In that way, we're building a good base for intelligence so that you will know, sitting here, what is happening in that municipality vis-a-vis that particular municipality at different scales. At the ward level, certainly. At a region, certainly. At a municipal level, certainly. But I think also across a city region, where a city region. I think that type of information we ought to be able. Now, if STEP SA is not doing that, then at least someone else must be tasked to do it. And as I'm saying, I don't have much of the technical knowledge, but I'm told it's a difficult thing. The other complication around stats, Chair, if I may say, is that there are private statistical collecting houses that have sort of, can I use the word and say they've almost closed that market, because the models are theirs, the intellectual property is theirs, and the history for statistical collection is theirs. So we continue to be dependent. So there's no amount of change that is there. We're still operating within their framework. And I think that's the point we're trying to make. The point around local government finance, again, I'm not going to pretend to be clever on this. I think the point, though, is to what extent can we start to push the envelope and get some municipalities that have some capacity to begin to raise their own revenue and become, and I think again, back to the white paper on local government, relatively independent of the national fiscal, because you can't continue making them dependent. I think the amount of grants that has flown, I mean, at some point we need to find ways of reducing it. I think that's going to take a long discussion. I think it will involve national treasury. We have a lot of policy and legislation that says this and that, which we must ensure that we do not go contrary to. But I think there's one single objective. Local government must be made to have its own sources of revenue so that they can take decisions and make mistakes with their own money at some point, because they're drawing a lot from the national fiscal. And I think it's an important... Now, this doesn't mean that we should willy-nilly just say to all municipalities they should suddenly get money or become independent. I think we have to do it in a very phased manner. Although in the same way that we've given accreditation, for instance, for human settlements to certain municipalities, all because we've seen some capacity. So it's the capacity to raise own revenue. What are those things? Again, as I'm saying, it requires the Fiscal Commission, National Treasury, and all of us to engage in that particular debate, but with one single intention in mind, ensuring that they borrow less and less and less, or they become less and less dependent on the national fiscal. Because the more, I mean, if you look at the amount of money that goes to local government as a sector, and of that total, who gets more money? It's the bigger municipalities at the expense of the smaller municipalities. So we have to tweak it in such a manner that dependence goes to those that, whether it's the sort of municipality or those that we know for a fact they are not going to have sources of revenue in a long time. Those can be grant dependent, but that grant is going to have to come somewhere. So it's almost like we have to take from somewhere to provide to those that do not have sources. I do not know why do we attract the type of audiences that we have, Chair. And I'm
not objecting.
Okay.
I'm suggesting you must go. If Mohammed doesn't come to the mountain must go to Mohammed.
All right. The second last question relates to urban-rural interface. I just heard quite recently in one of the sessions at the National Planning Commission that Matatiele is probably one of the fastest growing economic areas. I was shocked. But I think what it says to me as a practitioner is that actually I do not understand the economy of Matatiele. Or maybe I haven't been there in a long time. But I think better still, there is nowhere where I can go and continually update myself about what's happening in Matatiele without having to go to Matatiele. And I think that's what it is. How do we best understand the interface between rural and urban without having to be there physically? Is there a system that allows us to do that? And I think that's the whole point, that could then help us in the policymaking machinery to answer and enhance the system. I think 30% of that 1.2 million is going to come from Nelson Mandela Bay. I'm not sure whether the other 70% will come from, but I'm sure we will get it somewhere. And if we don't get it, it's not going to be a crisis. The chairperson does allow us to make adjustments every 6 months within the financial year. So it's not that much of a transition.
Okay.
Thank you very much. But let me point out that
from the urbanization policy, you asked about it.
Yeah.
I have also asked the department about it. Firstly, in the cabinet process, there were issues raised around it. So it has been held up there. Secondly, I think there's also not a full recognition of how urban policy is very important to rural development as well. I think we need to do some work. Thirdly, there's a proposal that this matter be dealt with by the National Planning Commission as well as COFCA and other stakeholders, where you include human settlements and so on. So that's where that is held up. The only other thing I wanted to say is that on this issue of having information about ward committees, I think that's crucial. If you look at where COFCA hopes to go in consultation with major stakeholders, not least the committee, which is to have a much more empowered ward committee system, where at some stage or another down the road, I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, you'll have ward development ward development plans and the like. And you're very familiar with the community-based planning and so on. So this, I think this thing of getting ward information will be crucial to both the majority party and government, I think, likely apart after December 2012. The final thing to say is that on CELGA, we only this morning agreed with the CEO that we will meet with them at their first, well, we'll meet with them, but we'll also go to their first NEC meeting to stamp on the minds of the new councillors that serve on the executive that we are here, this is our role, we are complementary to yours, you're the powerful organization, we are just an advocacy lobby, a lobby group around, a knowledge information sharing group around these issues that you have to act on, not us. Finally, I want to say to these members of the committee, I think I did mention it to the chair, that when I was asked to serve on the board chair, I was told that, look, the cities network report, the state of South African cities report, is very highly regarded internationally. So I thought Sitole was actually like just, you know, spinning to get me to participate and so on. But the fact is that I went to the Habitat Conference last year in Brazil, and on several occasions, at least three, if not more, people got up to compliment the report, not knowing that a deputy minister was seated there. I mean, I didn't stand up there and say, hey, big banner, I'm a deputy minister. They didn't know it. In fact, the World Alliance of Cities also acknowledged. I gather Brazil is going in the same direction as us to do a cities report based on our report, and one other developing country, I was told. In short, until, I don't know what the response to this report will be internationally, but certainly the two previous ones, and most certainly the second one, were extremely well received. And finally, I want to say that I think Sitole's leadership of the organization at the management level is quite exceptional, really. And I must say this because we also, with Parliament, have an oversight role of all the organizations falling under our portfolio. Obviously, this is a limited task they have, and it's focused. This is quite the best by far. Its use of money, its ability to deliver with a very limited staff and so on, I think it's commendable, really. Often Parliament, I know, is critical, and so are we as COFCA. I said this earlier with the Chapter 9 institutions. But this is one of the organizations overall that I think really does perform. Not because I'm the board chair. I mean, I'm just the reiterant person. I've contributed very little, quite frankly. It's been running. I'm a symbolic chair. Although I'm activistic, but it's true, it's really the organization itself that it really is commendable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maybe you must advise your CEO, chairperson, to be less modest and behave like a hen that lays one egg and the whole village knows about it. I want to reject your recommendation that we give you the indicator. We are going to, send it right back to you and the people we mentioned. You must meet. We are going to demand that meeting so that you are the experts. You must develop the indicators. We will say yay or nay to them when you present them to us. But they must be developed by yourself. But your comment that it is correct to have indicators is good. I think we accept that one. But it shouldn't be developed by us. We play oversight. We would like to see that you're carrying out your mandate in line with those things. It would be useful for that meeting to occur and at least agree, have some consensus. And secondly, I want to suggest that, in fact, that meeting is not only... You've actually made it even more important. I was aware of that monopoly of certain groups around statistical collection. How does the public sector operate effectively if there are no-go areas, so to speak? So that's unacceptable. We must find a way in which that must be broken. We must find a way in which we can work together and so on. But we must be able to generate information for government to do its work better. So that's the one line that I think is important. I also think we must temper our expectations a little bit. We will never be able to get some of the municipalities to generate enough money to be independent of national government. I also think it's a contradiction. That money comes from there anyway. You know, it goes up, but comes back down. I don't know which village you come from, or where you send your remittances and so on. So I have no clue. So in a sense, there is this is what cooperative governance is about. It includes financing. We acknowledged early on that we were disabused as civic activists when we thought one city, one tax base. Mm-hmm. You can't send us back there. Mm-hmm. One country, one tax base. So, and we must not underestimate the depth of poverty. Some of the problems that we've been talking about today still reflect those poverty pockets in the country that remain huge and so on. And it's not also an accident that most of the money goes to the... I thought this is the argument that you guys, you city slickers use. That, in fact, the poor have migrated to the cities in large numbers as a way to survive. And so for the cities to deal with them, the cities with their limited resources will not be able to cope without additional resources from national government as well. So that dynamic is crucial to accept, so that we do not work on an expectation that in some distant future, some municipality will be independent of national government. That really would be an unrealistic expectation. There's no doubt that we need to see much more creative tax-based growing strategies in municipalities than we have seen to date. So that's what we ought to be seeing more of, that strategies that are designed to broaden the tax base inside municipalities, that we need to do so that they reduce rather than obliterate their legitimate expectation to get some resources from higher up and so on. So that's the one point that I would really make around that issue. But thank you very much. We agree that the work you do is quite good. We were hijacked to attend the panel of speaking to the media about the report, but it's a very useful stuff that it generates. I think that bringing to our attention questions of sustainability, of food security is huge. It's a very important part of the work that we're doing. Just to select those things that I'm passionate about in the report. That's great stuff. I think some of those examples that I've made, they are great, and we need to learn from them. Thank you very much. We appreciate your input. Chairperson and the CEO, Jatin Solomon Bank. Thank you very much. One and a half minute break. And so Nabila, it's only one and a half minute. You don't want to multiply it by three or something.